When Daniel first showed Justice Ginsburg the film, he said at the end of it, she got up and she stormed out. And he kind of was nervously waiting. He was like, why has she gone? What, does she hate it? And then he leaned over and spoke to his mother, her sister-in-law, and she just said, well, actually, she's just gone to the bathroom.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I'm Tina Brown, and you're listening to TBD. Before Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a Supreme Court justice known for her ferocious dissents, before she was a cultural rock star and an inspiration for countless tattoos, she was a young attorney who could not get hired by a single New York City law firm when she graduated in 1959, despite being tied for the top of her class at Columbia Law School. The reason? Simply because she was a woman. And so she set out to dismantle, case by case, the laws which discriminated against women. On the basis of sex, the new film from Focus Features tells the origin story of RBG and of her marriage to Marty, her champion for 56 years. In one critical scene, a young Ruth debates with the resistant director of the ACLU about her determination to argue a landmark case in 1972.
Why shouldn't men be nurses? And if women want to fight fires...
What about pilots?
Yeah, again, if women choose to take on these
judges,
roles... Judges? Why not?
CEOs, generals... What about garbage men? You want to be a garbage man?
And if men want to be teachers or raise children, percentages aren't the point. People should be able to pursue
wrong.
Their passion.
You're screwing it up, Ruth.
Have you read the appendix attached to their brief?
These
are laws written by men who think we are privileged to be excused from men's obligations, but it is not a privilege, it is a cage, and these laws are the bars.
Playing Ruth in that scene was Felicity Jones, who was nominated for an Oscar for her role as Stephen Hawking's wife, Jane, in The Theory of Everything. I talked with Felicity before a live audience at a recent screening of the film in New York, along with NPR's longtime legal affairs correspondent, Nina Totenberg, whose expertise almost makes her the 10th Justice of the Supreme Court. We spoke just days before Justice Ginsburg had another health scare, undergoing surgery for early-stage lung cancer. But she's recovering well, and RBG is expected to continue as a formidable presence on the Supreme Court in 2019, and hopefully beyond.
Thank you.
It's very moving at the end when you see Justice Ginsburg walking into the court, I find. It's like we're clinging to her as such an image of just tenacious integrity at a time when it's in such short supply. There was something deeply reassuring about seeing that tiny blue figure walking into the court. Felicity, how much have you got to know the justice since you started on this project?
It's definitely, at first, it's a little intimidating when you're playing the notorious RBG. Justice Ginsburg has been involved with this story from the very, very beginning. Her nephew, Daniel Stiepelman, wrote the screenplay. And initially, when he first asked his aunt if he could write a film about her, she said, well, if that's what you want to spend your time doing, then go ahead. In her sort of very characteristic, dry sense of humor. And then Justice Ginsburg has seen every single draft, has given meticulous notes like any good lawyer.
And what was it like sort of sitting across from her, knowing you were going to have to absorb her in and make your own version of her? How were those meetings between you?
Well, I mean, so much of it was about understanding who Ruth was when she was in her 20s and her 30s. What were all those motivations and those drives and those injustices that she constantly experienced that she was able to channel and very effectively use as a vehicle for change? And so I was fascinated with understanding, how does someone get to the position that she is in now? How do you become that iconic figure that we all look up to?
Did she share any of that insight, or was it you just trying to extract?
It was very much getting to know each other as people. So we visited her in her office, and then I spent some time with her in her apartment, and she showed me pictures of her and Marty together. And I could see just how much extraordinary love there was in that relationship, mm-hmm. and just how much joy, utter joy, was in their faces. And I saw a picture recently again, and it just reminded me of just how special that dynamic mm-hmm. was. So that was a huge part of it. And then obviously you want to take on a character. I mean, it's every aspect of the person. It's, you know, the physicality, the voice, you're trying to create the exterior as much as possible, but ultimately you've got to lock into the essence. You know, what are the motivations and what are the drives of that person mm-hmm. that have got them through it?
Well, Nini, you've actually known the Justice for 50 years, right?
You had to say that?
I had to say. Because I think it's stunning. And it was interesting what you were saying. I did ask Nina earlier. I said, you know, what was she physically really like in those days? Because I know we've seen sort of pictures and so on. And tell me what you replied about how she was in those days.
So I, by the time I knew her, she was in her mid-30s. And she was a very elegant and pretty woman who, you've seen pictures of her with her hair tied back, that person. But I sat next to a guy at a dinner party in Washington who said to me that he'd been in her class at Harvard Law School, and that she was so ravishingly and exotically beautiful in those days. She had this big, beautiful head of hair that was down around her shoulders. And he said, then there were just 9 women in the class, as you've seen, and there was this huge, I think it was a torts class, on the very first day. And the professor looks down at his list and he says, Mrs. Ginsburg. And the guy said to me, the whole class of like 150 guys went, oh no, she's Mrs. already. We don't have a shot.
Because Ruth Bader was just so hot, right? That's amazing. What is interesting to me, astonishing really, is how much she's been out there on behalf of the movie. Do you think she's loving this attention?
Well, I think she likes it. Mm-hmm. And I think that since Marty isn't here anymore, that her public persona is part of what she really enjoys in life. And she has every right to enjoy it, but she really was the architect of the women's movement in the courts. And she prevailed in 5 out of 6 of the cases that she argued, and she wrote many, many more briefs that in cases in the lower courts and in the Supreme Court that she didn't argue. And she has every right to claim that mantle. But she didn't get a lot of credit for it back then. I mean, she got some, but at this moment, to have, as she says, you know, she's an 85-year-old woman, and there are all these people who want to have their picture taken with her, and she likes that, and yeah. she should like that.
It's her victory lap, in
it
a sense.
It is her victory lap.
And she certainly is owed that. Felicity, this is obviously a movie about overcoming these rejections. Rejection, rejection, mm-hmm. rejection. Was this what sort of powered you through this performance? I mean, did you relate to that? Obviously, an actor's life is one audition after another. I mean, and Ruth Ginsburg was constantly having to be told to prove herself in a different sphere, and it never was good enough, and she couldn't in the end do what she really passionately wanted to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I definitely empathized with her feeling of being in environments where she was in the minority. You know, she was constantly one of a handful of women amongst a lot of guys. And similarly, growing up on film sets, that was often the situation. So I channeled that in playing her. But I think it's her ability to keep going even when the knockbacks keep coming. You know, she has such a fight in her. Even with three ribs down, you know, you still get the feeling that she's got more ribs to give. In a sense, she doesn't. She doesn't let it push her back. She just keeps going. And so much of the film is about also how her and Marty, how they did it together, and how ultimately, actually, you don't do anything completely on your own. Ultimately, men and women work best when they work together, when there is parity. And through that working together, that's how we all rise together. That's how we are going to affect the greatest change.
Well, this movie actually, Nina, makes Marty into the great feminist hero in a way, right? I mean,
which he was.
Yeah.
I mean she it's would really not astounding have been on the Supreme him. Court without mm-hmm. him, because she was not sort of front and center in Bill Clinton's mind at the time. And it's not like the women's movement was united in pushing for Ruth Ginsburg, because she was 60 years old at the time. And some of them were worried that she wouldn't be good enough on abortion, because she'd been a critic of the reasoning in Roe and all that kind of backstory was going on. And he just sort of organized this letter writing campaign in academia and in big law firms and among big donors. And he, I don't really know all the things he did, but finally it gets to Clinton, and he's been knocked down by a couple of political figures that he thought might make good Supreme Court justices. And he invites her for an interview. And as one of the Clinton aides said to me at the time, he just fell for her hook, line, and sinker. And it's sort of an odd thing, because she's a very soft-spoken. If you sit at a dinner table with her, she's not chattering away. This is not your chatty Kathy. But when she's on the bench, when she's doing an interview, when she is giving a speech, she's a performer. And she understands that that's part of what she has to do. She is a performer.
One of the fictional parts of the film, I gather, was the scene in which, you know, she first of all blows it and then comes back and does the rebuttal.
Right. There was no rebuttal.
There was no rebuttal.
No, there was. This was one of the, you know, biopics.
She's never blown anything in her life.
Right. That's what Dan Stiepelman said when I, the writer, her nephew said. So I said, was that true? Did she say it kind of freeze like a deer in the headlights? Because the transcript of that oral argument doesn't exist anymore. So he went around interviewing all the living people who'd been there. And he said, oh, no, Ruth Ginsburg never blew an oral argument in her life. And so I said, so what did she say about this scene in which she's portrayed as sort of going, and he said she had all kinds of complaints, including the fact that she wears heels in the opening scene, because she says she didn't wear heels, but not about that scene. And so he said when she finally handed him back the script and said, okay, that's it, all of my stuff, he said, well, why did you not object to that scene? And she said, oh, everybody knows you have to make up some stuff to make it dramatic.
And yet it was true that at the dinner with the dean,
oh, yeah,
she did say, I want to be a lawyer so I can understand my husband's work.
Right.
It's also true. I was crushed by that answer. But do you think she was saying that to simply get through the dinner? I thought
she
it might
was mortified that she'd said it afterwards. But Justice Ginsburg is not somebody who will look for confrontations when they don't have to happen. Let's put it that way. She's very firm. When I interviewed her at Sundance, just as the documentary was coming out, it was in the height of the Me Too movement. The Weinstein story was on the front page of the New York Times and in the New Yorker every week. And I spoke to her beforehand and I said, I'm going to ask you whether this ever happened to you. She said, okay. So I say to her, so Justice Ginsburg, did you ever have an experience like this? And she said, oh, every woman my age had experiences like this. And when I was at Cornell, and here's parentheses Nina, she was 17. When I was at Cornell and I was taking a biology course, and I was very concerned that I wasn't going to do well enough in the course. Among other things, she had a full scholarship. And so I went to the professor to ask what I could do to prepare. And he said that he would give me a test exam. And he gave me the test exam, and then I studied for another couple of days, and then I went to the real exam, and it was the test exam. And she said, and of course, I knew what he wanted in return. And I'm sitting there, Nina, thinking to myself, oh my God, what do you do? Do you just never go show up in class again? What do? Just never see this guy? And I said something like that. She said, oh no, I went to his office and I said, how dare you? How dare you? And I thought, even at 17, she was really one tough cookie.
Right. It's incredible. I thought one of the pivotal scenes, obviously, was when she and Marty are walking down the street and she's had to endure him being saluted as the star and her being dismissed, you know, treated in a way that's minimizing to her.
You always do that.
What?
You act like it doesn't matter.
No.
But all the little brush-offs, the dismissive pats on the head, it matters, Marty.
So why? You know what you're doing is important, so who cares? Okay, fine. Next time my boss gives me a clumsy compliment, I'll challenge him to a duel. Does that make you happy?
I wouldn't want to hurt your stellar reputation.
Just tell me what you want.
Nothing. I want nothing. I want you to go to work and wow your bosses and clients and be the youngest partner in the history of
that's
the firm.
That's not fair.
Then
that's
I want
not
you to
fair,
walk me home,
it.
Marty, so I can sit in my corner and write a lesson plan to inspire the next
no,
generation of students
to
go forth and fight for equality.
I don't understand why you're acting like that's such a bad thing. You're out there training the next generation of lawyers to change the world.
Because that's what I wanted to do.
Tell me about that scene and filming that scene with Armie Hammer, who plays Marty Ginsburg.
Yeah, I mean, it's such. I think it's such an expression of that feeling of having to be a female and having to be pleasing all the time, and that pressure. And what the film captures is very much that 1950s patriarchal attitude. That you sort of had to always sort of be ladylike, and there's all these expectations on your gender constantly, which is what drives the case so much. Is both of them, neither of them can conform to gender stereotypes. They both are pushing against them constantly. And so that's how they're able to empathize with the case, because they understand what that feels like, just how limiting that is. But with that particular scene, we shot it quite late at night, which is always good because you're totally exhausted. So you don't care too much. And that's always good for performance and acting, because the less self-conscious you are, then usually something magical happens in that moment. And Armie and I mean, we just totally took a leaf out of Ruth and Marty's book. We collaborated. We were totally on the same page about stuff and weren't competing, and it wasn't a dynamic driven out of ego, which isn't always the case on a film set.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
What was, you think, the origins of Marty's enormous sort of, you know, unselfish, sort of empathetic feeling about his wife's career? It is unusual to be so incredibly understanding and empathetic.
I think he was, I mean, you yeah, knew him very well.
So
I think he was so
secure.
Confident, wasn't he? Yeah, in his own
he
in his
so
own job.
He was so secure in his own self, and his father was that way too, I think, in some sense. So his father said to Ruth, she was worried because she had an 18-month-old child and she graduates from Cornell. He was already a year ahead of her. He gets drafted. They go to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, where they spent 2 years. And as he said, it was a great way to begin a marriage because they were away from all the usual family and friends and the pressures that they can bring on a young couple. And they really had 2 years to work out their selves. So she's about to go to Harvard Law School, and she's scared. Can she do it all? After all, she doesn't know that he's going to get sick. This is just taking care of an 18-month-old going to and doing well. And her father-in-law said to her, Ruth, if you don't want to go to law school, you have every right to stay home, to take care of Jane, and nobody will think less of you. But if you really do want to become a lawyer, you will find a way. And I think that sense of equality must have come through to the younger Ginsburg, Marty Ginsburg. And apparently, Dan Stiepelman, the screenwriter, said this is the one part of the movie that people in Hollywood do not believe. They think that nobody would be this good. But I knew Marty Ginsburg for 50 years, and he was that good.
Wow. It's just inspiring. It's an inspiring story, inspiring movie for men in that sense, actually. It really is. It's so much about ambition, isn't it, Felicity? About a woman being able to pursue her ambition as well as be a mother, as well as be a wife. Mm. It's about the glory of having that ambition and being able to see it fulfilled.
Exactly. And that's almost what's so unusual about the ending of the film, that that it is about a woman having a career, but also her relationship stays totally intact at the end, and she gets to live. I mean, this never happens in film history. This is so unusual. So that's why it's sort of, I hope that in watching it, it does give people hope, because we don't get to see films ending in this way very often.
This is so true, actually. I mean, usually the women who are trying to sort of follow their ambition in some way get hit by a bowling ball or something goes horribly wrong to them.
They lose custody of the children.
I mean, you know,
they lose custody of the children or something like that.
So I love that stuff. I mean, I love watching that pull and her fighting to keep it and him fighting for her to keep it too. It was, I thought, some of the best stuff actually in the film.
Marty was on a panel 10, 15 years ago. And it was a panel about work-life balance, and he was on with a bunch of other people. And he said a very interesting thing. He said that thing about the beginning of their marriage, but he also said, you know, when I was trying to make partner, when I was really a young stud in the law firm, I could have been a better husband than I was. There were times I let her do too much, and the story I often get her to tell is about how she'd been up all night. She had a case that she was about to argue, briefs due, and the school calls about her son and says, for the umpteenth time, Mrs. Ginsburg, your son has misbehaved. Would you come down to talk to us? And she finally says, you know, this child has two parents. It's his turn. Call him. He went down, I won't bore you with the rest of the story, but the point of the story is that they basically stopped calling. She got maybe, instead of a call a month, they got maybe a call or two a year, because they didn't want to take a man away from his job.
Love that. I love that. It's also, Felicity, though, a real story of stamina, isn't it? Ruth seems to have this absolute superhuman stamina, let's face it. I mean, how many people could have done what she did with Marty and do the studying and do his work for him and raise their child? It's just absolutely mind-boggling. Did you find that, something that was really interesting to draw on?
Yeah, she only needs 3 hours of sleep.
Well, she does need more now, but she only takes 3 hours of sleep. That's the bad part.
But I think there's something, there is something in her. There's an incredible stamina, but also I think she loves it. I think, don't you think?
Yes, and she's just a ferocious worker at what she does. I mean, she's really, Tina, you're a ferocious worker, and I'm a ferocious worker, and you're a ferocious worker. It's just that she's been doing it at this level and at such a pace for so many years that it's a pretty awesome thing to contemplate, to watch her.
Have you ever sat watching the movie alongside her, with her?
Yeah, we watched it all together for the first time in Washington, D.C. And it was just, it was lovely just to see her enjoying it. And just, and she's seen the film three times, which is which gives us a good sense that she's enjoying it.
Has she told you which is her favorite bit? I mean, what piece that she really resonates to?
Well, it's interesting. When she when Daniel first showed Justice Ginsburg the film, he said, at the end of it, she got up and she stormed out. And he kind of was nervously waiting. He was like, where has she gone? What, does she hate it? And then he leaned over and spoke to his sister-in-law, and she just said, well, actually, she's just gone to the bathroom. but it was interesting later on speaking about it. I think it's probably been quite a moving experience for her. I think to see her family and to see her husband, her late husband, portrayed in that way, but she's been incredibly celebratory of it and has given us her seal of approval. So it's been great.
Nina, what did you think of the sex scene?
That was the first question I asked her on stage, and there was this long Ginsbergian pause, of which there are many. When you're an interviewer, you learn to suffer through those pauses because you don't want to cut her off because she's actually going to say something. So there's this long, and she had a microphone like this, and she was holding it like this, and she said, "Marty would have loved it."
I love it. Well, thank you. One last thing, Nina, on you is like, just you don't, there's a great line in the film: "You don't get to tell me when to quit." Right when Felicity, mm-hmm. As Ruth, tells the ACLU director, "You don't tell me when to quit." Mm-hmm. Is there anything to the criticism that says that she should have quit when Obama was president?
Well, I'm sure there's something to it, but I don't actually. My view is not. Is it not so? And I think it's been. You know, in the first term, what people who are her critics would say, her liberal critics would say, is she should have quit when Obama was reelected and done it right away. But you forget, she was, 78 years old. She was in her prime. And she was actually suddenly quite influential on the court. She made a real difference. She was winning some important victories. And by the time that she might have thought that it was possible, and even in 2012, by 2012, there was a Republican Senate. And I think she knew it would be incredibly hard to replace her with anybody like her. And certainly, normally you would have thought that in 2014 she could have easily done that, but I don't think so. And I think the handling of the Garland nomination is the proof of the pudding.
Right. And of course, like everybody else, she thought Hillary Clinton was going to win, right?
Yes, she did.
Felicity, you played...
She should have.
Yeah, well, you very good at playing very intelligent women. I mean, you played Jane Hawking. Is that the kind of woman you want to play? I mean, is that what you're drawn to most, what's your next role?
I think it's always, the thing that I'm fascinated by is the stories. What are the stories that you're putting into the world, and what are you trying to say? I think that growing up, that was always what I was most fascinated with. So that's what I'm always on the hunt for. Is it relevant? Is it going to be interesting? Do people want to eat popcorn and watch it?
All right. Well, thank you so much, both of you.
You've been listening to TBD with me, Tina Brown, brought to you by Wondery. You can subscribe to TBD on Apple Podcasts, follow us on Spotify, or keep up with us however you listen to podcasts. If you like what you heard today, please spread the word. Tweet about it, Instagram it, or try having an actual conversation with a real person. TBD is produced by Tina Brown, Catherine Russo, Julie Subrin, Karen Compton, Justin Giannino, and Michael Solomon. Original theme music is composed by Forrest Gray. Come back next time for more smart people on TBD.